welcome to Way Too Seriously, the podcast where we watch kids' movies and then take them way too seriously. I'm Paul Moffat.
I'm Jan Moffat.
And this week we watched and will be talking about The Lion King. Jan, do you want to tell us a little bit about this movie?
All right. The Lion King is a Disney movie. It was released in 1994. It stars Matthew Broderick, James Earl Jones, Jonathan Taylor Thomas, Jeremy Irons, Nathan Lane, Whoopi Goldberg, among others. It was directed by Roger Ellers and Bob Minkoff, and the screenplay was by three different writers, Irene Mecki, Jonathan Roberts, and Linda Wolverton. So two women, which I found interesting. And it, you know, it's The Lion King. If you've been living under a rock.
Fun fact. I think The Lion King is the last Disney movie I saw in theaters with my parents, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think I went to see Toy Story and my mom sat somewhere else. The Lion King, we walked out of it and my mom said something along the lines of, well, that wasn't very good.
Really?
And specifically, what she didn't think was very good was the music, the songs.
She's not an Elton John fan?
The music is not very good. I can't remember any of the songs walking right out of it.
Really?
That was not a very good movie.
Huh. Well, you know what? When we walked out of Moana, I kind of felt the same thing about the songs. I didn't immediately love the Moana songs.
But
they grew on me. Like almost immediately, I started listening to it again and was like, wait a minute, I love these. Why didn't I love these right away?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe your mom just doesn't like cartoons, though.
She's not a cartoon fan.
Yeah.
I think she was very happy when she didn't have to go see cartoons with her kids anymore. So the story of The Lion King, Simba is the firstborn son of King Mufasa, the king of lions.
Mm-hmm.
His evil uncle Scar wants to be king, and Scar tricks Simba into being trapped in a wildebeest stampede. Mufasa comes and rescues Simba and is killed by the wildebeests when Scar throws him into the thing. And the stampede, and Scar tells Simba that everyone's going to blame Simba, so Simba runs away and eventually realizes that his rightful place is back at home and returns to overthrow Scar and restore the natural order of things. If you've been living under a rock and don't know the story of The Lion King,
exactly.
That's it. I think that we should, our usual first chapter of this podcast, the objective judgment of the quality of the movie, should go quite quickly for this movie.
Yeah, because far be it from us to like diss a classic, you know,
or
like,
to repeat what's been already said.
Yeah.
Like the good things about The Lion King are, despite what my mom says, the music's pretty good.
Yeah. The animation is, for its time, good. It's that.
And especially, Disney. I really noticed watching it this time, the introduction sequence,
yeah,
the Circle of Life song, the animation that goes along with that is beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like the music that it's like the animation that goes along with the very beginning of The Little Mermaid. It, yeah, establishes the setting beautifully.
Yeah. Well, it's fun fact about my life in terms of The Lion King, because you said your fun fact. The only VHS, yeah, I know, the only VHS that we ever owned in my family, because we didn't own things, was Aladdin.
Uh-huh.
And the movie that came out directly after Aladdin was The Lion King. And so, back in those days, when you got the Disney movie, the previews and the little bonus features at the beginning of your VHS were for the next Disney movie that was coming out. And so all of our bonus features were about The Lion King. Bonus features are trailers. And so I watched that VHS a lot. And so I had to watch all those extra stuff at the beginning. Or I had to fast forward them, kids. Because there was no skip button in those days. And so it had a lot of how the Disney animators animated the animals. And it showed like Disney Studios. And they brought in a lion and they, you know, and they watched the lion move, and they went out to the zoo and watched the different animals. And you can really tell.
Yeah.
that that's what they did to make this movie. Like, the animals move like animals.
And if you think back to The Jungle Book, which is, in terms of the animation, probably the easiest comparison. Like, The Jungle Book is a really good movie in so many ways, but, like, the way they animate the animals in The Jungle Book is like, well, let's take a stab at it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, exactly.
They're attempting to actually capture how animals move, except I think any of the from behind shots of the lions moving fast are bad, because they have the two hind legs moving together in a weird way. Mm. I noticed it a couple of times.
Interesting.
Anyway, are there any, like, do you want to, are there any lowlights to the Lion King?
Highlights, lowlights? Well, I mean, yeah, there's lowlights to the Lion King.
That you want to point out, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, just in terms of even, like, this is a movie for children.
Yeah.
What age is it for? Because, like, I remember showing our kids this movie, or, like, you know, watching a bunch of Disney movies early on when we had kids? When our kids were very young. And I thought, you know, all the movies, The Little Mermaid, The Lion King, and I put on The Lion King, and, like, 90% of it is scary scenes.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of it. You have the whole elephant's graveyard near the beginning, and then you have all of Scar's Be Prepared song, and then he goes off and has Hakuna Matata, but then he shows up again and has all the scary parts with Scar again, and, like,
yeah,
a lot of it is quite frightening, and Mufasa's death is quite frightening.
I think, like, without exaggerating, if you were sensitive, 75% of this movie is scary.
It's scary, yeah.
Yeah, and our daughter, our younger daughter, even on this viewing, she's six, and the part where they're in the elephant's graveyard was scary.
Yep.
And the older daughter, the part where Mufasa died, was really sad.
Oh, yeah, she cried and cried.
I don't want to protect kids from sadness, or even from scariness, but just, like, so, what? Who is this for, yeah, exactly?
It was just a surprising change from the previous movies, in the Disney timeline. If you had gone to see Aladdin and Little Mermaid and then come to see this and went, oh, wow, this was much scarier.
Agreed.
I definitely saw it in theaters as well. But, I mean, I was 13 in 1994, so
right,
I was a teenager by the time this came out.
Apart from the quality of the movie, I mean, so,
yeah, just,
this movie is The Lion King, and you've heard of it. And what people say about the quality of it is basically, we don't have anything, I think, unique to say about that.
Yep.
Apart from that, how much do you enjoy The Lion King?
I like it. I think it's definitely among my, you know, top 15 Disney movies. Okay, it's not my top one Disney movie. I'm not sure of my exact ranking, but it's up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like, it's of its time. It's like, I love the Disney Silver Age. That is my childhood.
Yeah.
And so I love it for that. And I love the songs.
Yeah.
It was the first time that they'd really embraced the whole pop song thing. Well, I guess aside from Beauty and the Beast. I like Lion King quite a lot. I don't like it as much as other ones, but I do enjoy The Lion King. It's a great movie. It's a great movie. There's a lot of good things. I was quoting along with it, trying not to quote out loud because our kids get annoyed with too much of that, and singing along with the songs and stuff. And it was reminding me of our trip to Disney World last year, when we went to the Animal Kingdom, and it was very Lion King, parts of the Animal Kingdom. And I got to see the Lion King show, which you had sadly had to miss out on, and that was amazing.
Right.
And so, like, I mean, it wasn't the Broadway show, but it was like, it's like a show that they do in Disney World. It's all these acrobatics and stuff, and it was, like, phenomenal. And so watching the movie again reminded me of, like, wow, yeah, they've done some amazing things with The Lion King.
I really enjoyed The Lion King also. I think in terms of my personal enjoyment this time, my favorite parts are Jeremy Irons' Scar is great. Yeah, I think he's, like, doing an amazing job as Scar.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when I did not appreciate it at all when I was a kid, but now I think Nathan Lane is really great as Timon.
Yes, yes, all of his jokes are hilarious.
As a kid, I thought Pumbaa's the funny one, and Timon is also there. And now I'm like,
Timon's
the funny one. What are you talking about?
Yeah, Timon's great. I love Timon.
So do you want to move forward and we can take this movie
way too seriously?
Yes, exactly that. I want to start with race in The Lion King.
Yep.
So this is a movie set in and even more about Africa.
Yep.
So what are we doing with race in this movie? A lot of the lead actors are white.
Mm-hmm. The ones that are not are James Earl Jones, Whoopi Goldberg, and...
I mean, Cheech Marin is not African, but neither is James Earl Jones or Whoopi Goldberg.
No.
They're
African-American.
So the people of color in this movie are James Earl Jones. Rafiki is played by... an actor of color whose name I don't know, but I looked it up. And young Nala.
Yeah.
And then Whoopi Goldberg and Cheech Marin maybe fall into a different category in our minds, not less important, but because they are villains, that's something to take into account, that in your movie about Africa, the good characters are mostly white and the villainous characters are mostly not.
Yeah.
I'm not totally sure whether that's fair because Scar is English. And there is some colonialist subtext both in Scar and Zazu as characters.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, some colonialist, but there's strong colonialist context in Zazu for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And in Scar too, as the English accented one person who wants to be king of Africa.
Yep.
And I don't know whether we want to complain about Whoopi Goldberg and Cheech Marin. The hyenas are racialized others in the movie.
Yes.
Like the lions are...
good benevolent leaders.
Good benevolent leaders. And mostly with the notable and important, and not to be overlooked, exception of James Earl Jones. Voiced by white actors. And mm-hmm. the hyenas are the racialized other voiced by actors of color.
Yeah.
So we just said a mouthful.
Yes, we sure did.
And not everything that I just said is actually my position quite. I'm just kind of laying some stuff out.
Yeah.
Let's back up.
I want to talk about Rafiki.
Why don't you start with him?
Do you want to talk about that right off the bat?
Go.
Rafiki is kind of what we might call a magical Negro.
We might.
He is a baboon voiced by an African-American man putting on kind of this African dialect voice. It almost sounds like Rasta.
Yeah, it's African, but it almost sounds Jamaican. I agree.
Yeah.
Did you look up for sure the act?
Yeah, he was born in St. Louis.
Okay.
So, he shows up. He's the only character who's coded very African.
Yes.
Out of all these characters that are in Africa.
Yes.
He's the only character who's really coded African, and he does these kind of magical things. He's the one who blesses Simba. He's the religious figure, and then he magically smells on the wind that Simba's alive, and then he summons the spirit of Mufasa, and he's a religious figure, but he also feels very magical, and that's only problematic because he's the sole African stand-in
in this African
movie. And not that Africa is huge. Just to be clear, we know that Africa is a huge continent, not a single country.
And I think one of the things we're criticizing.
Yes, exactly. Is that this is just like Africa as a whole, as a giant amalgam of places. And so Rafiki takes all of the stereotypes on himself and is the other. He is, because he is different, he's magical. Because he has a different accent and has these religious aspects to him, he's also magical. And so that makes it feel like, well, Africans are magical.
Yeah. And
the other is...
I think what Rafiki is a stand-in for, he's an African witch doctor.
Yes.
I mean, let's put that.
Yeah, put that right out there. Yeah, that's what I meant by put labels spiritualism. On that,
right?
Yeah.
I remember some quite mild controversy after The Lion King came out. I mean, I was raised in a fairly conservative evangelical context, and I remember some mild controversy related to The Lion King, that it was about, you know, pagan mysticism, and the Circle of Life is about pagan mysticism.
Right, yes, of course.
And I now think, actually, I would like it if it was grounded in some actual African religion, or if it was more of a completely fictional animal
yes, exactly.
worldview.
Yeah.
Which I think they kind of are trying to do, but they...
It's just that by making it only one character.
Well, it's not only one character entirely, because Mufasa is the one who gives the speech about the Circle of Life.
Yes, he sure does.
So one of the big problems that you're, I think, putting your finger on, and I noticed watching the exact same thing, that like there's this sense of African tribal animism underlying the movie, and it's a bad look.
Yeah, yeah.
It is made way worse by the fact that there's the one witch doctor character who's given an African accent and is unlike everyone else in the movie and if we talk about people who are unlike everyone else in the movie because of their accents, the other two characters who are that are Zazu and Scar.
Right.
Who both have English accents.
Both have English accents.
Everyone else is American accent, with the arguable possible exception of Cheech Marin has a bit of a Mexican accent. Sort of. I think it's light enough, and it's all that we can basically ignore it.
Yeah.
In this context. So do we want to, I mean, I'm kind of moving on.
Yeah, I mean, more about... there's lots to say. It's the trouble is there's so much to say about race, but it has to do with this taking place in Africa. And I think that the stage show helped with that a lot. I think the stage show of The Lion King, which I haven't seen, but have heard the cast of that is mostly people of color, and that's really helped with that. Right.
Because in this one, Simba is the main problematic character. That why is Simba played by
Matthew Broderick
and not by, I don't know, who's...
Even, like, the singing voices are different, and, like, Simba's singing voice is, as a child at least, is played by an African-American person.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, why? Yeah.
And but there is an answer. And the answer is systemic racism.
Yep, that's the answer.
The answer is African-American 12-year-old doesn't get to be Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Yep.
I don't know if he was 12, but, you know, or he was around there.
Yeah, he's about the same age as me.
So, that's just the answer. And why does James Earl Jones get to do it? Because for one reason or another, he managed to be a star despite his race. Yep. And so he is cast in this movie not because, I mean, I don't know what the behind the scenes is, but we can say that he achieved a level of stardom that allowed them to ignore the fact that he was African American.
Yeah.
And he was cast as this, I think, because he has a fantastic voice for stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, let's not pussyfoot around about what's the why. Why? Well.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe we should move on to the actual movie itself rather than, the meta actors and whatnot.
In terms of within the movie, I think that the real issues racially are exactly what we've already talked about. And I think we could maybe move on from race having said that.
Yeah.
I mean, I keep wanting to talk about Jeremy Irons and Zazu as English-accented characters, and especially Zazu, and let me just put clearly into words what I've gestured towards, which is Zazu as the administrator of the aristocracy in an African context, having an English accent and the kind of English accent he is. Mm-hmm. He's the bureaucratic administrator of colonial rule.
Hmm. Yep. He sure is.
And that's why you have that character with that accent doing that thing. And not just the accent, like everything about him. He's, you know, the person who tells the natural leader what the people want, because even though he isn't connected to them, but he's the step between.
Absolutely.
Do you want to talk about gender in this movie?
Do I?
That's what I asked you. Does The Lion King pass the Bechdel test?
Nope.
Really not.
Nope, definitely not. How hard would it have been to make either Timon or Pumbaa a female?
Well, no, because then they couldn't be bros, Jan.
Yeah, I guess they couldn't have been bros. Anyway.
And, yeah, I mean, like, we're retreading ground we've tread before, depressing ground we've tread before. There are no female characters in this movie except the love interest and the mother.
Mm-hmm.
And even the mother
is not
a character.
She gets a name. But she gets a name. That's about it.
Calling her a character is very generous. Oh, and Whoopi Goldberg.
Right.
Well, I forget her character's name, but
the hyena. See, they make one of the hyenas a woman.
And she is a great example of how to do it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, she's a female hyena just because.
Yeah.
Right? You could have made two of those hyenas female. You could have made three of them female. You could have made...
Ah, see, if you'd made three of them female, you'd then you would have been in trouble.
I agree. You could have made either Timon or Pumbaa played by a woman and a female character.
Yep.
You could have, you know...
Imagine if Pumbaa was female. Just imagine. Imagine a stinky pig played by a woman. I think... It could have, like, you could have, like, the whole, like, Pumbaa is, like, stinky and farty. Like, have a woman in that role. You could. You really could. Women stink, too. It's a thing. You know, like,
yeah.
I just think that could have been, and not make it the butt of the joke, like, not make it the joke, just have the exact same lines
in a
female pig's mouth. I don't know. Whatever. They wouldn't have been bros, I suppose. But, like, there wouldn't have been any, like, love interest between any of them, because they're all different species. Anyway.
Which brings us to heteronormativity in this movie. Just is the problem with heteronormativity in this movie is the same as it very often is, and compounded by the lack of female characters. So the only female that he knows is his true love.
Yeah. Because they fall in love in like 3 seconds. Well, in the course of a song, which I guess is typical for a Disney movie or a musical in general. But... they're like friends as kids and then run into each other, what, 20 years later? 10 years later? And are like, we're in love now. What? You don't even know each other, man.
It's because it's what girls are good for.
I guess. There are some good things. And like, it's representative of what actual lions are like, which is one male, several females. And so it shows them... It doesn't change the reality of lion life, which is the females do the hunting.
Yeah,
the females are fierce and hunting and get the food. The males
just fight each other.
And the males just fight each other. And that is like what plays out in this movie. And so I like that they really might have changed that, because like, who knows what lions do? The women are, you know, stay at home, and like everyone knows that a male lion is fierce and tough, and so he kills all the prey. And like, no, it does what is the truth.
And they don't say. I noticed the movie never actually says that Mufasa is mating with all these females, but it also never says that he isn't.
Yep.
There are no other male lions.
There sure aren't.
And there are some other lion cubs.
Nala and Simba are brother and sister.
Let's just say that is a fact.
That is. I don't think there's any other way to think about that.
No. Nala and Simba are brother and sister.
That's lions for you, though.
That's lions. Just for all you Nala Simba fanfic writers, keep that in mind.
Oh,
someone.
There totally is not a fanfic out there.
Probably not, because they're a canonical couple. There's like Nala and someone who...
There's
and like Pumbaa
there's,
fanfic,
yeah, there's
that's
totally...
what fanfic does.
That is what fanfic does.
It does what the movie didn't do.
You're so. Right. I don't mean to get here. I don't even know.
I want to talk about... Everybody knows this is not a new observation, and if it's new to you, I'm not the one who thought of it at all, that the Lion King is Hamlet.
Right, yes.
The uncle kills the king to usurp his place, and the son comes and avenges the father's death. I noticed this... There's something about that I want to talk about, which is, like a Shakespeare play... This Disney movie is really about the divine right of kings.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about the divine right of kings for a little bit?
Yeah, because that's definitely a theme in this.
And that's, like, not just this movie. Disney is big into the divine right of kings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Renaissance drama. Also, I'm going to leave on the shelf why is Disney in general so invested in the idea of the divine right of kings.
Fairy tales.
But, like, in this movie, right, the king is the king, has the right to be the king, is the natural ruler and the natural rule, and the rightful place of the king is ruling at the underlying worldview of this movie is that kingship is good natural right, and that subverting kingship in any way is wrong and evil.
Mm-hmm.
And even when Scar... as Lion King, invites the natural enemies of the lions into the... invites their enemies in and decimates the land, and they don't have food, and they don't have... No one can do anything about it.
Yeah.
Simba returns, and the lionesses rally behind him, drive out the hyenas. He fights Scar, but we see that... He could not have done that without the support of the lionesses,
mm-hmm.
who don't like Scar's leadership. Why can't they drive Scar out themselves? And I don't think it's about gender. I think it's about the divine... I think it maybe a little bit about gender, but I think it's mostly about the divine right of kings, because then you're just another usurper. He is the rightful king, can mm-hmm. return and take his rightful crown, because kingship is something that happens by right.
The blood.
Rulership happens by right and by blood, and we can say that this is, there's a number of things about this, one of which is expand this to an entire worldview, and those who have power have it by right, and those who don't should be subservient, and if they were, that's where they belong in the circle of life. The idea of the circle of life seems very, like, hippie accepting, except that it's all very nice to be the circle of life when you're at the top. And
it's a circle, there's no top.
There is a top of the circle of life as it's depicted in The Lion King, because I'm the king, I eat you, and you can eat me maybe when I die.
Yeah, I know, I agree.
I don't have to do anything about it, though.
Mm-hmm.
And that that's connected to the welfare of the entire world. And I saw, like, the connection to Hamlet is something that lots of people have seen, but I saw this time, for the first time, a King Arthur connection.
Mm-hmm.
Which
surprising
is...
Surprising no one. Well, surprising not me.
Which is a connection to the Fisher King. Are you familiar, Jan, with the myth of the Fisher King?
A little bit, but go ahead.
In Arthurian legend, during the Grail Quest, they... and it goes differently in different stories, but Percival, the Grail Knight, comes upon a wasteland, and the wasteland is a land where nothing is flourishing and nothing is growing, and is ruled over by a Fisher King who's been wounded, and until the Fisher King is restored, the land isn't restored, and sometimes Percival and sometimes Galahad, whoever the Grail Knight is, uses the Grail to heal the Fisher King, and when the King is restored, the land stops being a wasteland and grows again, because the health of the land is directly connected to the health of the monarch.
Right.
So, why does Scar being king turn the whole land into a wasteland? Because it's the Fisher King. Because when the king isn't healthy, and Scar isn't morally healthy, when you have a bad king, you have a bad land.
Yeah.
That what makes everybody thrive... is not the circle of life. It's know your in place. Don't get uppity. Mm-hmm. Don't try to usurp the ruler. Your natural rulers are your natural rulers. And if you will stay where you belong, everything will thrive. And what Scar, the whole land is punished. I don't buy this garbage fan theory that is disingenuous. That, like, Scar was really the good guy. Those, like, why the villain was really the good guy fan theories that I don't know if you've seen.
No.
There's one about, like, all Scar does is give the hyenas food and they're hungry, so he's the great liberator of his people.
Right.
That's a disingenuous argument. But what is true is that Scar is punished and the land is also punished along with Scar, because Scar doesn't accept his place as he should.
Mm, yeah.
And the hyenas also, I thought things were bad under Mufasa, but they're worse now because they don't accept their place as they should.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
The hyenas, I mean, this has been said by other people, but the hyenas are part of the circle of life. The hyenas eat the dead. They're carrion-eaters. Oh, carrion is dead. Carrion-eaters. They're scavengers. Anyway, they're part of the circle of life. Why hyena? I mean, they have to pick a villain, I suppose, for the sake of the movie. But I don't like that, like, one creature is not allowed to be part of this grand circle of life thing. I'm like, what? They're the other? They're the...
Because civilizations only exist because you can draw boundaries around them.
Mm-hmm.
Because civilizations only exist if you can point to something that's outside the boundary line of the civilization. Yep. So the hyenas have to exist. Something has to exist outside of Mufasa's rule.
Yeah.
Or Mufasa's rule isn't a good, orderly, right, and just rule because cultures and societies and civilizations are always defined by their borders.
Yeah, absolutely. So when our daughter watched this afterwards, yes, she said, why isn't there a lion queen?
Yep. That is an excellent question.
Excellent question, daughter of ours. Why isn't there a lion queen? And Nala, she is born of Mufasa as well. So why couldn't she rule when?
Because that's not how lions work. Except that lions do not have kings.
Nope, they sure don't.
You're transposing a monarchical politic onto the animal kingdom.
Yeah.
And then imaginary straw man arguing with me, you're going to use the animal hierarchy to justify the imposed political system.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep. You
couldn't have a lion queen because there isn't a lion queen. There's a lion king. There's one male who rules all the things. But no, he doesn't rule.
No.
He f***s them.
That's his role. Male lions are, like, super lazy. They're not doing nothing.
I mean, like, to be...
We don't need to talk about the actual animals. We need to
talk about the actual animals. And, like, you know, I think male lions get called lazy. They perform a role, which is that they protect the pride against predators, other predators, and against other lions. But that's not the same thing as ruling. And so don't pretend that you're bound by how nature really works to keep from there being a lion queen.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay. So I haven't seen Lion King 2.
Neither have I.
I feel like the lion that gets lifted up at the end of this movie is female.
I think you're right, but I haven't seen the movie.
So that's a thing.
And I'm not gonna.
You're not gonna?
Well, I mean, $600 support on Patreon and we'll watch the Lion King 2. I don't know, we could maybe watch it.
We've watched Lion King 1.5 at one point.
It was pretty good.
Because... For a funny reason, because Lion King 1, if the Lion King is Hamlet, then the Lion King 1.5 is like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, the fantastic movie and play. And so we thought, well, we'll have to watch Lion King 1.5. I think we watched it like before we had kids, definitely. We were like, we're going to get this and watch it because it's going to be like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. And then it wasn't.
It was pretty bad.
It was pretty like bad.
In the way that direct-to-video movies always are. It was fine.
It was fine. But I don't know.
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead-y. Like, it was happening all on the accent, on the behind B-side. The scenes, the B-side. Yeah. And Timon and Pumbaa are absolutely Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Yes, they absolutely are.
I think we could say more about Lion King, but I'm ready to wrap this up if you are.
There's so much to say, and there's so much that has been said that it's hard not to retread old ground when it comes to a movie that is extremely popular and has been out for a long time.
What was new to me this viewing was the connection to the Fisher King.
Yes. Why is he a fisher? What does that mean?
He's in a boat fishing.
He's like a fisherman?
Yeah.
But he's a king?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
that's
and the way that, you know, naming conventions and mythology work is he's not always fishing, but he fulfills the role of the king who's fishing in the foundational myth.
Interesting. If you didn't know, that was what Paul's PhD thesis was on, with King Arthur, so he has much knowledge about these things. And I'm surprised it's the first time you've mentioned it. You've really connected one of the movies we watched to that.
Is or maybe it isn't. It probably is, yeah.
Anyway, so is it good? Is it seriously good?
I think in terms of good, it's good.
Yeah. I mean, the Lion King is a good movie.
I'm not going to say that it's very good, as I have about some movies that we've talked about in the past, but I think it's firmly good.
Good. Yeah, the Lion King's good. Okay, what about seriously good? I think seriously medium.
And I think I agree. Seriously medium, and the more I think about it, the less seriously good it is. I think it's on it's seriously medium rare.
Medium rare?
Yeah, you know, the bottom, less well done than medium.
But rare is good in steak.
That's true, so maybe we can't do that. But it's less well done than medium.
Than medium.
It's below medium.
I hate, because I know that Lion King is a lot of people's childhood favorites, but it definitely has some issues, and some issues that make it not so seriously good.
Yeah, and seriously, and it really is good. That doesn't have to diminish your enjoyment of the goodness of the movie, but it has some serious issues, and the more I think about it, the more those issues are. And we have not even exhausted them.
No.
At all.
No,
we just,
not at all.
You know, can't talk for hours and hours.
All right, well, I mean, if you have thoughts on The Lion King, which we know you do, this is a popular one, tell us all your thoughts on The Lion King. You can do that by tweeting to us at WTSCast. You can send us an email, waytooseriouslycast@gmail.com.
You can send us smoke signals. I don't know, what are you looking for me for?
If you want to support us, do the thing.
If you want to support us, if you like what we do, please support us. How, you ask? There are two ways.
Why are you saying this like you're a robot?
You can support us by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts. And you can support us on Patreon by kicking us some money. You can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/clockworkscast. You can support for as little as $1 a month, and there are lots of little bonuses that come along with supporting us, not to mention that it'll push us towards goals that'll help us to do a better job on this podcast.
Absolutely.
Have better sound quality, have more time, may even do more podcasts eventually. If we get to those levels.
Absolutely.
So your support in either of those ways means an awful lot.
And it just makes our day.
It really does. And even like communicating with us, we're always so happy when we get a tweet or an email or a comment.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to make us happy, don't you?
Don't you? Can you feel the love tonight?
I can feel the love. Can you feel the love?
I can feel the love.
Ah.
I've been Jan Moffat.
I've been Paul Moffat.
Hakuna Matata.
This is the first movie in the first Disney movie to directly or indirectly talk about farting. The end.